Today, we're going to talk about workplace leadership and culture.
Most people start with organizational culture as the thing to change, but really, organizational culture only supports the collective leadership culture.
You can have that humanity piece included. That's what's going to separate just a company from a company that thrives with a good culture.
When organizations notice people are burned out, what do? You can have an extra Friday off, we'll maybe increase PTO, but they're not looking at why people are burned out. And what it has to do with is the culture. That's why they're burned out.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to a new segment, Real Talk with Grow Getters. Real Talk with Grow Getters on the Real Business Connections Network. What's a grow getter? Simply put, we're talking a go getter. That's growth driven. We're looking to level up every single day. I feel I'm this way. I know you, the listener, are as well. And that's why I put together this panel discussion so I can learn from people that are smarter than me, at least about a couple things. And today we're going to talk about workplace leadership and culture, workplace leadership and culture. I have three incredible ladies with me today. And let's just do a round robin and introduce ourselves here. We'll start with Judith. Judith, tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, who you help, any of that jazz.
Hi, Ben. Thank you. So I'm Judith Germain, and I create clear thinking and decisive leaders so that business owners, leaders, and organizations can thrive in this constantly shifting world. What else can I say? So I work with organizations that want to enhance leadership capability, and I have a lot of fun doing it.
Yes. And you're very modest. You have an incredible online magazine and a podcast as well. And part of why I wanted you on the show is because you're really preaching how to truly be a maverick leader. And I'm excited to have you as a panelist here today, Judith. This is going to be fun.
Thank you.
Kendra, do you want to go next for us?
I will go next. Hi, guys. I'm Kendra Maples. My company is called Culture Crush. It is a hub for company culture resources. So instead of having companies have to search online and find folks like Judith and Catherine, they can come to me, they can come to our hub and find those resources, and we match them. So we're kind of like the matchmaker for company culture.
Matchmaker for company culture. I love that. And similar sentiments that I just said, like your podcast is incredible. Culture Crutch is incredible. You didn't even touch on this, but we might later. You come from a real empathy and love for animals, which I too have. And that's one thing that I find unique and interesting about you, a little bit about your backstory, Kendra. So maybe we'll touch on that in a little bit.
We totally will. Yeah.
The third person we have here today is Catherine. Introduce us to the audience.
Sure. I'm Catherine Matice. I own Civility Partners. We are a culture consulting firm, organizational development, and we actually specialize in turning around toxic workplace culture and behavior. I started this company after being internal HR, working with somebody who was a bully, I would say, and ended up going to grad school and doing all of my graduate research on workplace bullying. So I joke, I have a master's degree in workplace bullying and started Civility Partners on a mission to minimize that type of behavior in the workplace.
So important. When we're talking about leadership and we're talking about culture, we sometimes forget there's bullying and issues that go on, and being able to mitigate those concerns is so necessary. So I'm excited to learn from you guys today. Let's get started talking about like the link between leadership, culture, and the people we serve, our clients or customers. Judith, do you want to get us started with like, what is the link between leadership, culture, and the people we serve?
Brilliant. Yeah, it's a great question. So for me, I think everything begins with the individual. So us as leaders of ourselves, we have our own leadership culture. And that would be things like our authenticity, our beliefs, our leadership identity. Okay. And then when we go into work, we interact with other people. And when in that interaction, we form a leadership collective culture. So that looks at things like cognitive diversity, psychological safety, which I guess Catherine's going to talk about as well, and empowerment. Once we do that, we then have the organisational culture. So most people start with organisational culture as the thing to change, but really organisational culture only supports the collective leadership culture that you have. So the client or our customers, what they actually feel is the demonstration of the collective leadership culture. So that's where the link is. So we make mistakes, I think, as organizations where we go, right, let's change how we appraise people. Let's change how we, you know, how we pay people. Well, we're forgetting that collectively we have created a culture that directly impacts our customer, whether that customer is internally or externally.
So well put. I saw a lot of nods and nods. Kendra or Catherine, did we miss anything or anything you want to amplify, Kendra?
That was a really great answer to kind of lead into the conversation. I'm so excited that I get to share this with both of you ladies. I'm nodding at a lot of things because the other piece that you hinted at that ties culture as a whole to leadership is the humanity piece of it. Instead of the hierarchy piece of it, right? Yes, there is a hierarchy. I've worked also with a lot of veterans. There very much is an order, right? Of somebody else is at the top giving the order to the next person down and so forth. But if you can have that humanity piece included, that's what's going to separate just a company from a company that thrives with a good culture. Think about bosses and even just teammates that you guys have had, right? In the past, think about the ones that really knew you. They knew that you had a girlfriend, a significant other, a dog. They knew you as a person and not just, hey, can you mail this? Hey, can you email this? Hey, can you connect with that client, right? That humanity piece is what connects that leadership and that culture to be more than just, okay, I'm just going to work for a job, right?
Yeah. I would like to add something too. Love everything both of you are saying. And definitely my background's human resources. So I'm kind of always thinking about the fact that leaders and the collective leadership culture, I hadn't heard that term before, Judith. So I'm going to Google it after this conversation. But that leaders, you know, we say culture starts at the top and it does. However, having been in the HR industry for so long, I kind of say HR is ultimately the keeper of culture. So, and sometimes if the leaders at the top are bullies or kind of toxic, or they see humans as just resources, not as humans, then HR has to find ways to kind of ninja their way through that and still create the humanity and the vulnerability and the psychological safety. And so I like the idea of operationalizing culture, and that's, you know, a lot of what we focus on with clients, and that there's leadership, but then there's this operationalizing culture. And I just wanted to add that in there.
I love that. How do we take what we're doing right here and operationalize it so other cultures can pick this up and create great leaders? Well, I'll stay with you for a moment, Jude, with leadership culture, and then obviously the people we're serving. Paint a picture of the difference we get to make when things are going smoothly here. Like, what is the purpose of all this? What kind of results can we get in our company? Who do we get to serve by actually making sure we have the operations, we have the right leaders, we have the right culture?
Well, I think if you consider that every single person in the organization is a leader, because the first leader we have is ourselves, right? And then what we need to be doing is empowering people so that they all lead. And the benefit from having a culture that has leaders in it rather than just employees is that the decision-making is faster. People take ownership and accountability. People don't leave things to fester and they won't tolerate toxic behavior. So what we get is if a client gets what they need because the people closest to them is empowered to deliver that. And that's what you get when you have everyone as leaders and you follow like the Maverick leadership sort of principles, is that every single person sees everybody else as a client of them, whether they're internally or externally. So it goes straight to the bottom line. It's more efficient. It's cheaper. People feel empowered. They're not disengaged. People love coming to work and actually doing something meaningful. So if we're all leaders, we all act with meaning and purpose.
Well, I can say there's definitely a lot of research out there for all the data-driven people listening to back up what Judith is talking about that, you know, obviously, and you don't even need the research. It just makes sense that if I like work, I like my team, I feel valued there, my human needs are met, right? Which we're social creatures. We need to feel valued just as much as we need to eat and sleep. They're not different. And it just makes sense that if I'm at work feeling good, feeling valued, I'm certainly going to care more about the company and the customer and the end goal and the mission of the company versus if I'm coming to work where the culture is not great. I'm, you know, just kind of there to pay my bills. That's a whole different scenario. And, you know, just Harvard Business Review, for example, is full of tons of research studies showing how the bottom line can be impacted when you have a good culture where people want to be there. So there's just no way around it. And sometimes I feel like, why are we even having conversations like this? Shouldn't leaders just care about people or, just, you know, bottom line's great, but also just as a human. But here we are having these kinds of conversations.
At least now, though, Catherine, I feel like these conversations are happening more often. And the data, to your point, the data's there, right? 10 years ago, if we were having this conversation about company culture and taking care of people, the data wasn't necessarily around it. And now the numbers are there to show, yes, you care for your people. And then also it helps every other area of business, right? If your people go home, they're thriving, they're happy, they're going to tell all of their family and friends about this company. Whereas, I mean, I've worked for a handful of companies that have had a great culture and a not so great culture, right? And everybody in my sphere could tell when I worked for which ones, right? Because I'm telling them about all the great things versus going home and saying, like, to your focus, Catherine, what you do with focusing on the bullying. I've had a couple of places where there was a bully in leadership, and that affected then everything about me, how I shared about the company, or if I just kept my mouth shut about the company, right? So when you look at it from data metrics, like those numbers are out there now to correlate with all of this. So you can see saving on retention and, you know, then you have free little people as marketing people out there as your voice. And we just have all of the information now, which is so great.
Right. I love that you brought up the domino effect. If people are unhappy, they take that home to their families. They maybe withdraw from their children because they're in their head and frustrated. Maybe they're more inclined to yell easily at home versus if they feel good. So I think there's really a moral responsibility for leaders to create a good culture. And there's research connecting divorce to toxic work environments. You know, the spouse gets annoyed and doesn't want to hear about it anymore. And even parenting. So anyway, I could go down a rabbit hole, but I think we all agree here. Culture is important.
Let's go down that rabbit hole a little bit because we're on it. What does, Catherine, what does a toxic workplace look like? What people listening might be part of one and not even know it. Like, what does a toxic workplace look like?
Well, burnout is a main one. In fact, there's a really great McKinsey Institute article that talks about, I love this article because it was like everything I've ever been saying is in the article. You know, that when organizations notice people are burned out, what do they do? You can have an extra Friday off. We'll maybe increase PTO. but they're not looking at why people are burned out. And what it has to do with is the culture. That's why they're burned out, right? So, so burnout's a big one because we're overworked, we're stressed, we probably have a bullying type of a scenario or uncivil anyways. Other signs of a toxic environment are lots of gossip, lots of behaviors that are exclusive. And I think we don't use that word enough. We say inclusive all the time. Let's create an inclusive environment. But the opposite of that is exclusive. I'm left out of meetings. I'm not invited to lunch. I'm interrupted a lot. You know, so there's a feeling of exclusivity. When departments are siloed, that's another sign we see a lot. Lack of trust in leadership, where you kind of feel like leadership doesn't care about me. They don't value what I bring. They don't communicate. They're not transparent. So those are the types of things you see in a toxic environment. And I just want to say real quick, a caveat. I use that word toxic a lot. And I think for some people, it's like, well, there isn't overt sexual harassment. It's not awful. But I do feel a little unhappy when I'm there. I think that lower level stuff, I say with air quotes, is still very impactful and still toxic. So even inappropriate sarcasm is toxic. And so I use that kind of big, highly charged word for even little things. Toxic is anything that is insidious and can disrupt the organization's culture and functioning.
Pervasive. Yeah. I was just going to say pervasive, maybe coercive control, stuff that you don't always see. Right. Go ahead, Jude.
That's all right. I didn't mean to jump in there. I was thinking in terms of toxic environments, it can be even more subtle because sometimes exec teams don't really notice what the employees are feeling or doing. Mm-hmm. So it gets to have to be really bad for a notice, but there's other things that can show toxic. So I would say things like, has innovation and creativity decreased recently? Is there more absence in a particular department that is not mirrored anywhere else? You know, is everybody off with flu and it's the middle of the summer? You know, it's those kind of things that looks at toxic. You know, how safe is it to say what you feel? Does everybody agree all the time? You know, have people stopped socializing with each other? I think sometimes we can ignore really clear signs of toxicity because someone's not shouting. Because when you started off, Ben, and say, can you be in a toxic environment and not know it? No, you can't. It's impossible. You will know it's toxic. And I think it comes back to what Catherine's saying in terms of the definition of toxic. If you're unable to bring your real self in, and every time that you try to do something, you feel unable, it's probably due to some level of toxicity. Whether that's collectively, like you're excluded from things, or whether it's just one or two people. You can't be in a toxic environment and not realize it.
See, Judith, I got to push back on you and we're gonna have a little debate here.
Yeah, cool.
I would argue that that's not accurate because what happens is people start to normalize the way the environment is. And I have given so many speeches about workplace bullying all over the world. And people come to me all the time after it's over and say, I just wanted to say thanks for giving me some vernacular. I didn't realize I was being bullied or that it was that bad until you spoke. And then I heard what you had to say. So I think while we don't, maybe you go to work and you're like, I don't really love it here, but it's not that awful. And maybe you can't really pinpoint what you don't like about it. But that's because whatever that exclusive or toxic behavior is, feels normal. And I just feel like in my experience, I've talked to so many people who didn't realize they were in a toxic scenario until they came across my or other people's content, because the culture is normal, right? Whatever it is, whether it's toxic or good, that's the norm. And that's how people understand the organization and how to live in it.
I think it's the same. I think it's no different from, I remember years ago, people in the UK, for example, were being sexually harassed. However, they didn't have a definition of sexual harassment. That was something that American people talked about. What's that? But everybody knew that there was something wrong. So I agree. People might not label something as toxic, but they know that they're having panic attacks on a Sunday night. They know they're drinking too much coffee. They know that one person, I don't want to be around them. So you're right. So they might not label it as toxic, but I don't believe someone can be in an environment and be affected and not realize it's not right. I guess that's what I meant from what you were saying, Ben.
Yeah.
And it goes to what both of you were saying. There's extremes of it, right? I've been in a workplace where I had a boss literally scream at me in front of outside of a room of 40 students. I knew, okay, this isn't good, right? But on the other side, right, I've been in those moments where, Catherine, you were saying, like the increased PTO, things like that, where it's just the Band-Aid, but you're okay with it because I get more PTO, right? And so I think about it almost in terms of a relationship, right? There's some relationships that just kind of fade away. And when they're breaking it down, they've stuck in it because it wasn't bad. Right. They've stuck in it because, I didn't beat you or I didn't scream at you. Right. But it wasn't great. And they got okay with just the subpar. Right. And so I kind of look at that as I'm listening to the two of you. Right. There's these extremes of when we say toxic workplace. Right. Of yes, there's very big red flags. But then there's also these moments of it's subpar. You might go to work and you might be stressed, but also they're giving you unlimited PTO. So, hey, why not take the unlimited PTO? And so this, you kind of just settle, right? It's not horrible of the stories you've heard, but it's not great either.
You know what? I think so interesting there because I'm sitting there thinking, right, it's cultural. And not just organisationally, it's also by countries. Because it's interesting, because I'm just listening to the solution that you're saying, like in America, and I'm thinking, well, we just wouldn't do that in the UK. So, you know, to get to that point would be so extreme. We wouldn't just, you know, so it's very interesting because it's the individual, isn't it? And where they come from and what's accepted and not. So I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah. Context matters. The country you're in matters. The UK is a lot more advanced in their respectful workplace laws and how they manage workplace bullying. And the United States is actually pretty far behind on a lot of these things. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question for the group that I want to tackle from a lot of different perspectives. So, maybe I'm being bullied at the workplace. It's definitely a toxic environment. I don't have good leaders. There's a lot of things I can do, right? Everything from maybe I have help in my team, but maybe there's stuff that I need to do outside of work. You guys tell us. So I'm in a toxic scenario. There's bullying. I don't like the culture. There's bad leadership. Anyone can go first, whoever has an idea here, but what are different ways that I can mitigate that issue? And I already know that I want to probably either find a new role or a new company, but what do I do to make those steps?
I'll be happy to go first. This is kind of my realm. I'm going to give a kind of an answer that's a subtle but important thing that you need to do or action. So I did some research where I asked for stories from people who had been bullied at work, and now they define themselves as successfully getting out of that scenario. And of course, I'm thinking I'm going to get stories of people who told HR and HR fixed it and everything's great, but that's not what happens. And so what the common theme was through all of these stories, everybody's story was so different, but they all have this thing where it's going downhill, downhill. And then they sort of hit a rock bottom and they make a decision that they're going to take their power back. And that's the first step. You have to decide that you're going to take your power back. Now, what that means for everyone is very different. For me, I would say I'm successful. I was in a bullying situation. No, I'm not. For me, I got fired. And what I did was come home and start a business. That was my decision. Another woman basically decided, I'm going to stay here and fight this fight. I'm going to be the civil rights activist in this organization. But that was now she's fighting. She's not being bullied, right? Another woman had a story of kind of dropping her keys on her boss's desk, like, I quit. And she just, the way she described it, she must have been facilities and had all these keys. I could just hear it. And she went, you know, and then it was over. So that the decision is different for everyone. But that is the first thing you have to do. Decide that you are taking your power back.
I think that makes a lot of sense to me. And again, it's interesting culturally. So I also have a background in HR too. And in the UK, we would say go to HR because there are specific laws and stuff that needs to be followed. But I would also say, outside of that, know who you are. Find a group of individuals, whether they're internally or externally, that is your support system. Practical steps, regardless of which country you're in, is to start taking notes of what's happening, what was happened, who was there, what time, what the result was, because you need to create a history. Also, to do the things that you need to make yourself feel safe. And sure, and the strategies. For me, I'm high on the strategy, so start to make a plan. So to run off, so to leave the organisation without having a plan in place is something that you should only do if you absolutely have to do. I think get your plan into place and the people around you that need you to move forward.
Kendra, did we miss anything? You've left a couple of bad scenarios. So what did you do, or what did we miss?
Yeah, so I've kind of done a little bit of all of this. So Catherine, I love that you say the first thing is the decision. I had left a position similar to you because I was laid off. I was one of the executives. They let all of the executives go. And I needed them to make that decision for me because I was in the position of really supporting the team. So I was like the protector for the rest of my team so that they didn't see the rest of the nasty culture and the toxicity. I was protecting them. And so my team was thriving. I was the middleman, you know, blocking it. It was like the Wizard of Oz with the little guy behind the curtain. And so they made that decision for me. And so sometimes making the decision isn't you making it yourself. It's somebody else making it for you. And now it's interesting because I've seen a handful of folks that are in similar work situations, and they haven't gotten ready to make that decision yet. They're still in that phase of, it's not that bad. I get PTO, I get vacation time. They're still in that phase and they're okay with it. Then they go and they stress on the weekend too. But you really, that piece of making the decision is definitely what happens first, whether they make it for you or you make it. And then similar to the gal that drops the keys, I have been that person. And Judith, it probably wasn't great. I didn't have anything lined up. And I had to know myself and know my own worth, which is a process in itself, right? A lot of people think, well, this is where I am. This is where I have to be. This is where they pay me for what my experience is. I really had to get to the point of accepting, no, this is not where I should be. And I did that with no notice. And I said, okay, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I did play the bigger person as I left, in the sense that I didn't say, I've never said anything bad about the company. I left. I still connect with people that are in that space, but I really did the, okay, I'm done. I don't have a job lined up. I don't know what I'm doing next, but I needed to just take that step. So I don't necessarily recommend that piece to everybody, but it definitely, it's a combination of seeing these toxic kind of red flags and then being able to Catherine's point, make the decision, accept that you are worthy of so much more, and then make that plan. And Judith, you said it, be strategic and make a plan.
Great roundup. I have a fun question specifically for Kendra, but I know it's going to spur additional conversations. You're going to have to set the stage a little bit for us, but you used to work hand in hand with animals, and you're really passionate about talking about some of the comparisons between working with animals and working with people. So set the stage. You used to work with animals. What did you learn by working with these animals?
I did. And then, Ben, you're right. It's going to roll into what the other two ladies are all talking about today. So my background was animal behavior and husbandry. I trained animals. And over time, I shifted from working with animals to then training people to use the animals for presentations and things. And then eventually just shifting into the people side. So operations and leadership. My teams that know me really well, they know that I'll tell you, polar bears and people, they're all the same. So at the root of it is a few things that I call them my five C's. Whether you're working with animals, that could be training your dog. You may have heard my dog in the background. Whether it's training animals or working with people, my five C's that I go by is communication, connection, consistency, cookies, I'll explain that one, and compassion. So in a nutshell, communication, that's how you communicate with people. Nowadays, we have technology, we can communicate with people in so many different avenues, right? So how do you communicate with them that's going to be the right fit for them? And then on the other piece of communication is a lot of the way that you communicate with people is not through verbal written information. It's your face, right? It's your body language. And so how are you communicating non-verbally? Connection is huge. I mentioned at that one company, I was kind of the blocker of the bad stuff for my team. I knew my team. I knew the single dad. I knew the mom that had to pick up her kid at 1 p.m. I knew all those pieces. I knew them as people, right? So to me, that's huge. Know your people as people. Consistency, you have to do these things regularly. You can't just show up one day and, you know, Catherine, with the work that you're doing with focusing on not bullying, you can't just show up one day and be like, guys, I'm an angel. I'm so good. And then the next day you turn into a jerk again, right? You have to keep a consistency with whatever you're doing. Cookies is just rewards. Right. And it's for people at work. It's for people at home. It's if you need your spouse to unload the dishwasher. It's all of these things. What are the rewards? Right. And giving them that acknowledgement and the reward of what they want to receive. Right. Some people don't want big accolades in front of a group of people. They maybe just want you to write a note or something. Right. So, cookies just means rewards. And then compassion. At the end of all of this, as we're talking about strategy and we're talking about toxic workplace, if there's no compassion, then none of these pieces are going to work. None of these pieces are going to grow. And that person should just be off on a little island by themselves. but the compassion piece, you have to want to change these things. And some of the companies that I work with now, when I go in to do an assessment and work with them on their culture, if they don't see that there's a problem, I don't want to work with them, right? They have to really want to make the change and have the compassion. So I would love to hear, ladies, your thoughts on this, but these are my five that I go through. I did this when I was training animals, and now I do it when I'm training my team and when I'm getting family members to unload dishwashers.
I wrote all five down for the listener. If you couldn't write them down, community, connection, consistency, cookies, rewards, and compassion. For Jude and Catherine, do you want to grab one of those five and go a little deeper for us?
I mean, they're all great. I like the the five C's. I'm not great at creating the models like that. I think that's awesome. Also, side note, my resident trainer here at Civility Partners, she is a former zookeeper. So I saw that. And so you guys have that in common. I guess I'll touch on compassion and tie it back to culture in general and kind of the individual component. It's hard to be compassionate in a culture that you don't feel like you fit in, or that you feel like your team doesn't trust you or your manager's not treating you well, then that compassion goes away. So it's important for managers and leaders to, I like what you, Kendra, we've both been talking a lot about kind of the vulnerability that you have to open up and be a person yourself in order to get your team to open up to you as well. And I think there's a real shift that's been happening over time. It sped up a little bit with COVID, and now I think we're kind of going back a few steps. But with COVID, we saw inside people's living rooms, we saw their children running around, their dog, their cats walking along the desks, so there was just a real opportunity for managers to build compassion and empathy and rapport with their teams, because we were all in that together. And I've often said, for example, in the world of bullying and harassment, that if you want your employees to tell you when something like that is happening, you have to demonstrate that you're willing to be vulnerable and allow them to be vulnerable and compassionate. So I feel like I'm a little all over the place, but like if I feel harassed, that's a huge ask of me to tell my manager or HR. That puts me in the most vulnerable place possible. Right. And so I'm only going to do that if I feel that the company values compassion and vulnerability. And so there's this real mixed message. I'll also say, just in terms of kind of gender emotions, since we're talking about compassion, we don't like crying at work, right? And that's maybe more of a feminine type of a emotion, no crying at work. But yelling and being assertive or even aggressive seems to be okay, right? And that's more of a masculine kind of a behavior. So I think we just have to really be thinking about what emotions, what behaviors, what do we expect and accept in our organization? And vulnerability has to be part of that. Compassion has to be part of that. And that means if you're going to allow yelling, you have to allow crying and, or not, don't allow any of it. But I just find that and kind of an interesting observation I've made over the years.
I thought of it like that. I think for me, if I was going to pick one of the C's, I think I would pick community. So my belief is that leadership is personal. It's personal in a couple of ways. It's personal to the individual who is leading, because what you bring to the situation is personal to you. You bring your perspective, your point of view, your leadership identity. And it's personal to the individual that you are leading. So a lot of people will say, oh, this is just business, it's not personal. And what they actually mean is, it's not personal to me. It's not personal to me. It's just business for me. You don't count. If you want a great culture, that you want to create community, you want to create the ability for people to feel like they belong. And if we view things through the lens of, does this help people to feel like they belong here or not? I think it makes culture a lot more easier if we literally stare through that lens of belongingness rather than worrying about, especially in the UK, which specific law needs to cover or which specific group. If we focus back or align back to the values of the community, mm-hmm. which have been predetermined, and how we enable that community to feel like they belong, it solves a lot of our culture issues around how do we recruit, how do we retain, how do we promote, how do we deal with our customers, when we ought to be saying, how do we make it possible for the most amount of people to feel like they belong most of the time?
Amen.
And I think then that ties into
the connection one, because Judith, as you were talking about personal versus business, and there's an overlap in those spaces. I feel like in the past you would tell like, oh, it's just business, right? I've heard that so many, oh, it's just business, right? And now that's not really acceptable, because if you think about it, you're going to do business with the people that you're connected with. One of the new sponsors that I have with our company, they didn't ask about all the numbers or anything with the podcast or anything like that. We've been personally connecting, right? Business to business, but on a personal level, right? And so when they decided to be a sponsor, it was, you know, no longer this, oh, it's just business. No, it is personal. That's who you want to connect with. And I think that's why this culture thing is, it's so great that these are conversations that we can have more often, because personal life, business life, home life, work life, they're all overflowing into each other, right? And so that connection piece of needing to feel connected, having a community to feel connected, they all kind of tie, they all do tie in with each other.
I think people have been describing for years culture being, what do we do around here? That's culture. Whereas I would say, yes, what you do around here is culture, but also who you are around here is now also culture. And that's the bit that we miss. Who are we around here?
Yeah. It's, you know, what we do for a living is a huge part of our identity and our self-esteem. And it's taken so long for the working world to recognize that and treat people better and treat them as humans. And we still have a huge, long way to go. But when someone says it's just business, they're like what you said, Judith, what they mean is it's just business for me. It works for my identity and my self-esteem. Because this is who I am, but sorry, it doesn't work for you. And so I think we really have to keep that in mind, that even if you work a 9 to 5 or, you know, 4 hours part-time at a gas station during that time period in your life, if that's where you work, that's part of your identity and part of where you can get self-esteem or not, or, you know, have it damaged. So we do need to be able to bring our whole selves to work and feel valued and like people care about us.
Catherine, you said something there. We still have a long way to go. We didn't solve all the world's issues in this conversation. So I have three goals. Goal number one, I'd love for the three of you to continue to be connected. Goal number two, I'm going to continue to support all three of you. I love your missions. I love what you're doing here. And goal number three, bring the listener on board. So let's tell the listener how they can support you. We'll start with Catherine. What's the best way that me, the listener, all of us can support you on your mission here?
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I have over 50 LinkedIn Learning courses, and they are all around these topics. They're available in 12 languages, so they're a global audience. So if you're on LinkedIn, find me. You know, like a course or two just to bring attention there, because that's a way I feel I can help the world on a bigger level than client by client, which is what we do at Civility Partners. And if anybody wants additional information about culture or turning around toxic cultures, sign up for my e-newsletter. We do something every week and it's not sales. It's strictly, you know, tangible, useful information. And I do a LinkedIn Live every Thursday morning as well. So I'd love to see everyone over there.
Lots of ways to reach Catherine. And you can even reach me in between. If you want to reach out to me, I'll make sure you're connected with Catherine and Civility Partners as well. Kendra, how can we support you, my friend?
Yeah. So when I started this business, by accident. I started the podcast first. And so it was bringing in company leaders and resources to talk about how they can improve company culture. And then after about a year of that, folks started to reach out to me and say, hey, do you have a resource for mental health in the workplace or employee engagement in the workplace? And then we really started to assess it and go, oh, this makes sense. And then I started to reflect back on my previous jobs when I was everywhere from between a middle manager all the way into the C-suite. And I was looking for these resources for company culture. And one, I didn't know where to look. You're Googling this stuff online. You have no idea. You're Googling DEI workshop, right? You don't know. But then the other part of it is you're only Googling what you know. There's so many resources out there that companies don't know are a resource for improving company culture. And so fast forward to the place that I'm in now with this company, I'm doing this and building this so that there is a hub of all of these resources. So people don't have to struggle and Google and not know. Even Catherine, with you and what you're doing, that's a space that people probably aren't sure to Google. And then Judith, with you, like connecting with people in your area, your neck of the woods, right? From I'm in Arizona. You're a little bit further than me, right? And so really, it's just bringing these resources together. So there's two sides to that. If there is a company out there that I haven't met that has that mission and has that focus of improving company culture through whatever resource means it is, then I want to meet them, including these two lovely ladies today. And then on the flip side, right? If you're a company that you're trying to figure out how to improve, but you don't necessarily know how, I don't have to be the one to answer your questions. And actually, I don't want to be. I just want to go and do the assessment and then connect people with folks like these two amazing ladies. I want to connect them to the right resources so that people aren't sitting there frustrated, Googling, and not knowing the resources that really are out there for them to help them.
And you bring cookies.
And I bring cookies. I do have a really good cookie lady that makes cookies for our event.
Jude, round us out and tell us how we can help you as well.
Okay, so my mission is around creating clear thinking and decisive leaders. And one of the ways I do that is through the business about catalyzing transformation. Now, I believe very strongly that leadership is about influence, and I can help people to get better influence. I have a scorecard called amplifyyourinfluence.scoreapp.com, where you can go on there, spend 7 minutes of your life, answer some questions, and then you'll get quite a detailed report about your ability to influence and the kind of factors that you need to look at, and then how to improve that score through resources and help. So I'm all for helping people to improve their impact and influence. And as you know, Ben, I have a magazine, the Maverick Paradox magazine, and the podcast for the pathological curious. So where you can learn some really valuable lessons and from lateral thinkers and challenge your thinking. So if you're an organization that really wants to enhance leadership capability, whether that's in leadership culture, change or diversity, or an individual that wants to be different, have a better impact and influence, then contact me via my website or on LinkedIn.
Beautiful. And I have an incredible team that took lots of notes. So if you scroll to the description, the show notes, everything we spoke of is right there. And if you want me to help bridge that gap, reach out to me. But I'd love for you to connect to these three amazing women. And wow, thank you for the conversation today. I learned a lot. But I also learned that there's a lot still to learn. So let's keep the conversation going.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.